Welcome to Coffee with Catholic Workers, a podcast from and about folks involved in the Catholic worker movement. I'm Theo.
And I'm Lydia. We've both been active in the Catholic worker for the past decade, and we are excited to introduce to you some of our favorite people from the movement.
On today's episode, we're talking to Hope Vaughn from the Emmaus House in Chicago. She tells us about being a Dorothy Day superfan at a young age, before we chat about mutual aid and jail support work.
And one of the unique things about this interview is that I am also from Emmaus House, and so Hope and I were able to do this interview together. So now, on to our episode. You know, we'll just kind of go ahead and give the caveat that there is a dog who also would like to participate in today's podcast, which maybe one day we should do a Catholic worker pets podcast.
Definitely.
Because there are strong feelings about pets within Catholic worker houses. Well, we can go ahead and jump and get started. Hope, you sort of had a unique journey to the Catholic worker. I think you may have gotten involved with the Catholic worker at a younger age than anyone else we've interviewed so far. Could you tell us a little bit about how you first heard about the Catholic worker and what drew you towards it?
Yeah, so I went to a Catholic high school in like a suburb of Connecticut. And it was right outside of Hartford. So one day a week, I think it was called Thursdays in the City. We would take like a minibus and we would go to the Catholic worker house, which they call the greenhouse in the north end of Hartford. And we would go, and their Catholic worker house is very youth focused. So we would go after school and we would help, you know, kids with their homework. We would tutor them. And then always there was time for recreational play. There was a half a basketball court back there and all like as well. So there's like so much to do and so many kids would show up. And part of the curriculum of my school as well is we had to do a sophomore service project. So you had to pick kind of like a cause you were passionate about within a social service agency. And you had to do a certain amount of hours of volunteer service with them and then you had to write like a report on it. And I chose the category. I just instantly was gravitated to the energy there, the values they stand for. And just the people that encompass it.
So you had mentioned that you first got involved with the Hartford Catholic Worker in high school, and you turned into a bit of a Dorothy Day fangirl. Mm-hmm. How many school reports did you think you wrote on her?
I mean, there's how many school reports, especially in Catholic education, do you get that's like write about like your most inspirational leader or something like that? And it was always Dorothy Day. I think I've written at least 10, if not more, like so many. But I still feel like there's so much to know about her. Like in preparation of this, Lydia was laughing at me because I was going through our library looking through Dorothy Day books because I was like, I need to fine-tune my literature on Dorothy Day.
I wonder how many other guests of ours have had to study before coming on the show.
I know. I did think, I was like, man, maybe we should like throw in some like Dorothy Day quiz questions, not to like the study and go to waste.
No, that's okay.
So what was it about Dorothy that had you interested in her? What were some of the values that resonated with you?
I liked how she just, you know, did her own thing, especially within the realms of the Catholic Church. I mean, there's the traditional Catholic Church structure, which she didn't conform to. You know, she created what was her vision of Catholicism through this vision of the Catholic worker. And her values resonate really strongly with me. Her spirituality, her simple living, her acts of service, and her willingness to, you know, put a lot on the line for her passion for social and racial justice.
Well, so how did that all lead you to Emmaus House then in Chicago?
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy story. I graduated undergrad with my BSW in Rhode Island from Salve Regina University. And that December, I committed to 2 years of service through the Jesuit Volunteer Corps in Santiago, Chile. And I made it there, but only for 3 months. And then unfortunately we were evacuated due to COVID. The pandemic kind of rolled out while we were there. So I came back home, kind of the world was shut down and I was just kind of picking up the pieces, figuring out what was my next move. And because I got my BSW, I could get my MSW in 1 year from accredited university within, I think, 5 years of graduation from undergrad. So I just decided to utilize this opportunity and this downtime to get my master's. So I came to Chicago. And especially during the pandemic when, you know, isolation was super emphasized, I knew I didn't want to live by myself. So I looked into the Catholic workers that were in Chicago, and there were three. There was Su Casa in Back of the Yards, which I was really interested in staying with them. I was in touch with Maria, which is funny because now she's my neighbor here. And then I was in touch with Carly Ann from Emmaus House and also Sam from St. Francis House. And I did a week-long stay at Emmaus House and St. Francis House when I got here. And Su Casa at the time wasn't accepting workers. And then I did like a little discernment period. I went to Indiana, South Bend, where my cousin lives, kind of just discerned and ultimately decided on Emmaus. It was kind of funny because I guess I didn't really communicate that I was coming for good. Lydia picked me up from the airport and I had two huge suitcases. And I think it kind of resonated with her, like, oh, like, you're here. Like, no, I'm not going back to Connecticut. Like, I'm here. Like, I'm going to figure out where I'm going to live. I'm, you know, I'm going to do it. But that day was a really wild day because I had landed. I had an early flight. I landed at Midway at like 8 a.m., maybe 9 a.m. And that night I participated in the protest that tried to take down the Christopher Columbus statue in Grant Park. And it was just a really intense protest. There was a lot going on. And our whole house was involved. It was a really strong bonding opportunity, oddly enough. But yeah, it was just, you know, a really big day. And that's ultimately what why I decided to stay at Emmaus, is because that initial connection, we were all fighting for the same cause. We're all living the same values. And we all get along really well, which is a plus.
It did make it seem like our house was like really intense and involved. I mean, it was a very dramatic action with like fireworks and mm-hmm. tear gas and mm-hmm. pepper spray and a lot of things going on. So you know, we were putting our best foot forward of like, yeah, we're out here fighting in the streets every day.
Well, it's just cool to see the connection too. You know, we were out there and just so many people recognized individuals from our house in different contexts and different communities. And that was really powerful for me because I think one of my most prized values is community. And that's kind of what solidified my love for Emmaus. That's what started it.
Yeah. And I guess it caused you to stick around longer than the major pandemic lockdown too in the end.
So do you want to share a little bit about what you're involved in here now?
Well, there was a lot to jump into as soon as I moved to Chicago, and I had a nice grace period of, I moved here in like mid-July. I didn't start classes till the end of August. So I had like a good month and a half to get settled and to meet people. So right when I got here, Emmaus House had started a mutual aid network called Westside Mutual Aid, where we supported neighbors in delivering groceries on a weekly basis. And this was a result to the COVID-19. Because a lot of families and a lot of older folks were affected by the isolation and just the food desert, the lack of resources there are in our neighborhood. And I really identify with just the work that they did and the movement of it. So I started volunteering with Westside Mutual Aid in July. On a weekly basis, I do calls. I call like a handful of participants in the program in the mutual aid network. Just ask them if they want a food box per week, and then on Saturdays, I help pack and deliver the groceries.
Could you talk a little bit for people who maybe aren't as familiar with the idea of mutual aid or what mutual aid is, but kind of describe what that is?
Yeah, mutual aid is and I don't have my phone with me, but there's a good graphic. I know that we've exchanged it before, the difference between mutual aid and charity. Mutual aid is, you know, helping your neighbors. It's extending a hand. It is bringing light to resources that are around, and those resources are us. You know, we're helping each other. It's knowing that we're not going through it alone, and it's knowing that there's a hand out there to help in, especially when we're struggling. When the pandemic hit a lot of us really hard. I don't know. You have a better description about mutual aid than I do. How would you define
No, that sounds great. And what does Westside Mutual Aid look like? How does it operate?
So what I appreciate most about Westside Mutual Aid is that we're a decentralized organization. So there's really not one person who holds a lot of weight. Well, in Westside Mutual Aid, there kind of is. There's Heather, who, you know, is just the backbone of it. But there's the collective of people that help make it happen. Without the callers, the participants wouldn't know if food was coming or not. Without the deliverers, it wouldn't be happening. Without the food rescue that we do per week, we collaborate with grocery stores and other food sources to get the food that they would waste and throw out. And we use that food to ship it off and pack it up within days. So that's just not wasted. You know, it's still good food. It's kind of crazy how much we get of it too, especially at Amaya's house. I think the past three nights we've had mutual aid chicken, we call it, just these boxes of chicken that we freeze and, you know, have on stock for when we're ready to eat it. But it's really just utilizing resources, making sure that nothing goes to waste, and just helping those who, you know, need a helping hand.
And Theo, you've actually been doing a book discussion, right, on mutual aid by mm-hmm. Dean Spade.
Yeah, it's a really good book. I recommend it to like all kinds of folks. I think like it was so good. I'm almost wanting to start incorporating the words mutual aid into like my one sentence description of like the Catholic worker, mm-hmm. or at least like the ideal of what the Catholic worker should be or whatever. Like maybe that we're like a decentralized, anti-capitalist, Christian-leaning mutual aid group or something like that, you know?
I think that's a really accurate description.
And I know it was actually really powerful for some people who have participated in mutual aid that Emmaus House as a Catholic worker had participated because of past harm done by Christianity, and feeling like, wow, here's a group that's actually living out this value in a way that's not harmful. And so I think, yeah, it's able to be this touch point into other people who maybe aren't going to be attracted to the Catholic worker through Catholicism or mm-hmm. Dorothy Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just that it's meant to bring in all kinds of people too, I think, was an important part. And like Hope was talking about, everyone can have different roles and bring their own gifts. Like maybe one person can only call to see who needs the mm-hmm. boxes that week, but maybe another person is really good at lifting boxes into cars, you know, and everyone contributing instead of, and it being kind of a horizontal thing was a big takeaway, not just like a vertical charity. I'm coming to you as like the resource person, but how can we all work together to bring our own resources? So yeah, big fan of the mutual aid.
Yeah, I think that's the best part about it too, is everyone's strengths come together to move the collective along. We have folks on our team who are just callers, like you said. Especially now when COVID-19 is kind of, you know, coming and going in waves, but volunteer and recruitment is always a struggle for any organization. So in order to help Westside Mutual Aid, I created flyers and would boost them through my work. And I actually got a couple bites. I got some people who are on our calling team, and that's all they do, because you can do it from your home. It takes 30 minutes a week, you know, if that. So yeah, it's just, it's really inspiring, and it's really just, it sparks your emotions just to see the movement come along. Just a collective of people doing it.
And it survived COVID too. And it's, there's like a larger Chicago mutual aid network too, right?
Yeah, so now we're looking at sustainability of the mutual aid network as a whole. So there are collectives that are coming together to try and bring all of the mutual aid networks together so that we can all work together as a giant collective, because we're all doing the same thing. It's just in different neighborhoods. And to an extent, the warehouse we work at is kind of that warehouse for the majority of Catholic or majority of mutual aid networks. But there's still a few stragglers out there that we would just kind of want to reel in and have it more uniform and organized so that the system just functions and flows.
And right now, the Mutual Aid Network, it has its own warehouse, which is pretty impressive,
yeah.
And its own cold storage and arrangements with other off-site cold storage to be able to store it. So it's really its own operation.
It really is.
That's really quite impressive of this decentralized decision-making network that is able to work. So what else are you involved in at Emmaus?
Another group that I volunteer with is Chicago Community Jail Support. Their storage is conveniently located out of half of our garage. So that's another reason why I got involved is actually even before they were out of our garage, the jail is a mile and a half up the street from our house. And we have free parking near our house, so it can be convenient to, you know, store things and whatnot. But Chicago Community Jail Support is another decentralized group. We support inmates as they get released from Cook County Jail. So we provide snacks, water, cigarettes, resources, transportation, bus cards, all that good stuff. And in the winter, we provide clothing, which is really essential because you wouldn't believe some of the folks that get released in just t-shirts and shorts or whatever they were locked up in. And if they were locked up in the summer and they get released in the winter, they're supposed to be given clothing, but it's very inconsistent if they do. And that organization has also grown significantly since I started in 2020. It used to be there was a separate house that had the storage, and you would take your car and you would go and load up the resources and then set up site at the jail. And then that site closed, and then we offered our space. So then they came and they cleaned out our garage conveniently, and, you know, they set up these beautiful shelves, organized system. So then you would take your car, you would come to the garage, you would load it up and you leave. And then one of the volunteers bought a van, like a big white, almost like an ice cream truck van. And so now the van stores all of the supplies. It's nice and organized. It's got some shelves and storage in it. We have a table, we have chairs, we have a heater for the winter. Now the van just goes to and from the jail, and it still gets that storage and the re-up of resources from our garage. But sometimes it stays at the jail and we'll pay for parking, or sometimes it'll stay outside of our house where there's free parking. So that was had been a really another really great organization to be involved with, another group of just really diverse and beautiful and eclectic people. Yeah, it's been a struggle with Chicago Community Jail Support recently, because in the winter it's harder to get volunteers. I mean, if it's cold out there, we're out there every day from 5 to 11, and it can be hard to get volunteers. So that's been a struggle. But we still do it every day.
What do the police think about you all setting up outside the jail?
It ebbs and flows. Actually, Theo was with me when I got into a little tussle with an officer. You know, they pick and choose what battles they want to fight when they want to fight it, and it's all nonsense at the end of the day. That day, and I was just in a sour mood to begin with. But that day we had set up, I mean, you can tell where we set up. It's a giant dirt patch now. You know, the grass is gone. There's wood chips to not make it muddy. And I set up in our usual spot, and the sheriff came and he was giving me a hard time. Like, you need to move across the street. And it's like, I don't know, like 30 feet away. And I'm like, you really want me to just move across the street? Like, I'm here, you know, saying I don't want my people interacting with your people. You're a distraction, this, that, and the other. But you know, what I like about Westside or about Chicago Community Jail Support is it never goes unnoticed. A few weeks after that, and I had recorded him too, because I knew he was going to get a little lippy with me. And I recorded him. And a few weeks later, some volunteers had asked me for the video because they were, I think, collecting evidence of, you know, how the police treat us when we're out there. And we're really not doing anything. We stand there. We don't interact with them. You know, they're like bees. If you don't talk to them, they won't talk to you. We're handing out chips. You know, if they take chips and water, we're not going to tell them no. You know, they can do what they want. We're a very lenient group. But, you know, we're all just helping an oppressed population at the end of the day.
Yeah. Chicago Community Jail Support was actually interesting in how it started, because it had started with the protests providing support for activists being released outside of individual stations. Mm-hmm. And then it had sparked this conversation of, like, why are we providing this support for activists and not for people who are being released on a daily basis?
Yeah.
And it was out of those conversations that shifted of, like, yeah, we should do this really for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting evolution also of trying to rethink this us versus them kind of mentality of who are the ones we actually support and who do we decide, like, it's worth it to sit out at all hours
right
in order to make sure that people make it home safe.
I don't know if we need to keep plugging the mutual aid book, but I mean, that's kind of like almost an example right out of there. He talks about a situation, well, that, like, these mutual aid efforts start in crisis often, and he names specifically a fire in California, I believe it was, where they started helping all these folks living in tents in a parking lot of, like, a Walmart or something, because they'd all lost their homes. Eventually, the more resourced people all got someplace else to stay, and it was just like the undeserving homeless people who had been homeless before the fire were left. And it, you know, why do we draw these lines between, oh, these people deserve help coming out of jail, or these people don't, or these people deserve help trying to find housing, or these people don't?
Yeah, well said. I think that's a debate I get into a lot with folks. I mean, because supporting inmates getting released from prison isn't exactly, you know, well respected by a lot of people. But I often like to challenge people on why that's their perspective. You know, it doesn't need to be. You know, people are people for a reason. When people get locked up for a certain crime, I think, gosh, I wonder what's going on in their life. You know, like, what support, what resources are they lacking? Like, what could we do? And, you know, how could we extend a hand in mutual aid and help them out? And that's what we try to do. We always have on-call housing support, because a lot of times inmates come out and they're like, I have nowhere to go, especially in the winter when it's so cold. So if we have funds, which the funding for jail support is really interesting because we operate off of individual donations. And some people are really committed to the cause and donate on a weekly or monthly basis. And other people contribute in donating resources. We get a plethora of Target boxes shipped to our house for donation drives that we bring to the garage.
It is interesting, actually, to look at both Westside Mutual Aid and the larger mutual aid network and jail support and the ways in which they're both similar and different mm-hmm. to different Catholic worker houses, of many houses doing these individual donations, not an official organization or 501c3,
mm-hmm.
where Westside Mutual Aid has recently shifted into being under an organization that essentially helps other organizations have better accounting to try to prevent, like, misuse of donations, which is also important.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, like, these lines that these two organizations are walking and both wanting things to be decentralized and not a charity model,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, like, needing structure to build accountability, and especially when there is a decent amount of money flowing through them.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I value about the mutual aid network and jail support, which kind of ties into the Catholic worker values as well. And this is how I schmooze people who are like, oh, you support inmates getting released. And I bring it back to the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, you know, visit the imprisoned, feed the hungry, give clothes to the naked. And those kind of motivate me in a daily basis of why I do what I do. And it's a perspective that I wish more people understood or just took time to just think about. You know, it's not a matter of if you agree or not, just think about the concepts of it. You know, there's people out there with lack of resources, and, you know, we got to do what we got to do to help each other out.
Well, let me ask, you know, Lydia and I sometimes kind of get tagged as young people in the Catholic worker movement, but...
Whoa. I don't know if this was picked up, but Hope just snorted. Just want to make that clear in case it doesn't come through on the
But, you know, we're both in our, like, mid-30s or something like that. Not exactly what everyone calls a young person. But as yourself being a young person or younger than us, what do you think is important for younger folks who are interested in the Catholic worker to know about it?
I think the most common misconception about the Catholic worker is that we're all nuns and priests living in a house together. And I just want it to be more normalized. You know, there's such a stigma against the Catholic Church right now, rightfully so. And it can be hard to be like, oh, I live in a Catholic worker, and you know that first judgment is coming. I want people to think of us more of a house. I describe us as a house rooted in racial and social justice. We follow movements. We support people. There's so much I want to say. I think it's just, I want there to be more young people in the movement, you know, like, especially at being at the Midwest Catholic Worker Retreat, you saw the elders and, you know, the stories they had, the perspective they have, the wisdom they shared. And it just gave me this desire to want to continue that and to want to be able to keep the Catholic worker movement alive. And it's dependent on my generation, you know, and there's not many of us out there, young folks in the Catholic worker. So I definitely want to get the word out about the Catholic worker movement and that it's not as daunting as it seems and that there's so much fulfillment and enrichment. And you can, just like Dorothy Day kind of led her own way of Catholicism, you can lead your own way in the Catholic worker. It's not set in stone. Every Catholic worker is different. Every person in every Catholic worker is different. You can be your own Hope. You can be your own Lydia. You can be your own Theo, you know?
So as someone who has potentially like a good amount of time left in the Catholic worker, what are some of your dreams or hopes for the movement? Like, what are things that you hope to do within the Catholic worker?
Oh, this is a question that always gets me, and I talk about it a lot, especially when you're on a 20-hour car ride for Beth and Lydia's wedding with Maria and Paul. But I don't have a long-term goal of myself in the Catholic worker. I was just talking about this the other day with Beth, actually, and I think she kind of slid the question in of, you know, what's your vision with the Catholic worker? I see myself, I'm very content, very happy, very comfortable at my routine and my lifestyle here. I see myself living in the Catholic worker for at least 5 more years, if not more. I just don't know what my long-term goals are yet. I'm still discerning. I'm only 2 years into it, okay? Well, 2 years of living into it. But for the Catholic worker movement as a whole, I definitely want to see more passion, more energy. In, you know, what I do in my professional life as a manager, I tell my staff, like, if I give you a task or an assignment or an objective, I'm not going to micromanage you. I want you to take it and run with it. I want to see your creative spirits come out of it. I want you to put the twist on it that you do. I want you to bring out your strengths. And I think that's what I want for the Catholic worker, but with the people in it. I want the people to develop it. You know, it's a very traditional movement in that I think we could speak to more people by touching on more platforms like podcasts and, you know, blogs and Instagrams and things like that. And we're, you know, bit by bit, we're making our way through Facebook and podcasts and all that good stuff. But I kind of just want to see more passion. I want to see more young people take what the Catholic worker movement means to them and run with it, you know, and see what kind of creativity what kind of movements we can support, what kind of, you know, abolition we can practice and all that good stuff.
So I don't know how caught up you are on these podcasts, but in the last couple podcasts, we've started doing the lightning round of questions.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So we prepared a handful of lightning round questions for you for rapid answers.
Okay.
So I'll start off with the first one.
Okay. I have to answer it fast.
Yes.
Okay.
If we got a 100-pound donation of something, what would you hope it would be?
Plantains.
100 pounds of plantains coming to Emmaus.
Yes. That's just because Ariana's making Latin food tonight, and it's on my mind.
Well, why is Emmaus House the best community?
Oh, that's such a tough question. There's a lot that makes Emmaus House the best community. The food is the, okay, if I had one answer, it'd be the food. Okay. Because we have a lot of cooks in the house and everyone has their own cooking style. So, you know, if someone's cooking, like, it's going to be so different from like this person, you know, but that's the best part about it is you get a taste of everything. We're a very competitive house. We play a lot of games. That's also one of my favorite, aspects of Emmaus. Lydia here is a pretty big Rummy Cube fan. She's pretty good at it. We also like Code Names, The Mind, Exploding Kittens. I like our emphasis on starting tradition. So we get Christmas trees every year. We have a Thanksgiving dinner together, like a big, big Thanksgiving dinner. There's a lot that makes Emmaus House Emmaus House that I really appreciate. We do activities together, like sometimes we'll have jam sessions. We haven't done it in a while, but some people play music in the house, so we'll sing. Some people will play their instruments. We'll have movie nights. Those are popular. Play some movies, make some popcorn, bake some cookies. But we really put the community in community at Emmaus House here. But that's my biased opinion.
So last question.
Okay.
What are your favorite beverages, alcoholic and non-alcoholic, since Emmaus House is a dry house?
Right.
In the house.
If I'm in Emmaus House, my favorite beverage is some sort of juice. We typically always have juice, like a lemonade or like a fruit juice, apple juice. We had an apple juice kick. The trends come and go here at Emmaus. So we had lemonade for a while in the summer. Sometimes like we'll put mint from the garden in there or Kool-Aid. That's always a big kick. So that's my, if I'm at Emmaus, that's my non-alcoholic. If I'm across the street at any of our sister houses or brother houses, partner houses, I would have an espresso martini. And people who know me know that I love a good espresso martini. It needs to be made with real espresso, no espresso flavored vodka. And it needs to have a little bit of Bailey's Irish cream in it. Mm-hmm. Mm, sounds delicious.
So now anyone coming to visit Emmaus knows what to get Hope. Take her out.
Yeah, it's coffee cocktails with Catholic workers tonight, I guess.
We should have filmed across the street.
We should have.
Well, thank you, Hope, for being willing to allow me to drag you into this. It's very hard for like a housemate to decline. But to be fair, Hope was a willing participant, entirely voluntary, for joining us on this podcast.
No, thank you for having me. I was telling Lydia too, the day she asked me, I was like, oh my gosh, I manifested this, because I had just talked to a friend. I was like, you have to listen to this podcast that my roommate and my friend are doing. And I was like, I hope they ask me to be on it one day. And then she asked me and I was like, what? But I'm so excited to have been here. Thank you, Theo and Lydia, for being yourselves.
Thank you.
Well, we want to thank Hope for being willing to join us on the podcast. It can be a little intimidating after, right, we've done episodes of people who have spent their entire lifetime in the movement, to kind of jump in and put yourself out there, having only been involved for living in a worker for a couple of years. So we really appreciate Hope for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Hope's kind of been doing it a chunk of her lifetime, too, to be fair. She just doesn't have as much post-college age-ish lifetime to have lived, really.
It's true. It's true. It's transitioning from right, the extended community piece into the live-in community piece. And there is some irony that although Hope did reference that she doesn't know that she'll live in a Catholic worker forever, she kind of referenced, like, you know, the next 5 years, as if that was like a short period of time to spend 7 years of life living within a Catholic worker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. I feel like I had a kind of similar thought probably at about that point in my Catholic worker career. I think it's good she's not trying to bite off the whole "I'm committed to life" thing. I think there really is a truth to the kind of saying that, like, the people who come for a lifetime only last a month, and the people who think they're only coming for a month last a lifetime. I think there is a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, Emmaus House is a community. When we started, we only had people giving sort of commitments for a year or so. And so it was just kind of like, well, after every year, everyone's like, well, we don't think we're necessarily called to go anywhere else. So I guess we'll keep staying. And I think three of us ended up here for like 6 years, 7 years. And I'm the only original one left now at this point. But you know, it was a lot of years of being like, well, one more year, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One bite at a time or whatever, I guess.
Right.
I thought it was fun that the thing she would want other young people to know about the Catholic workers, we're not a bunch of nuns or something like that. And I definitely know what she means. I remember somebody one time kind of asking me, like, very specifically, like, oh, you're a Catholic worker. I don't know what that is. That you're like a priest or like a monk or something like that. And you know, it's like, oh, no, definitely not one of those things. I'm the kind of Christian who, like Hope, is like, yeah, we're going to go protest the Christopher Columbus statue is what we spend our time doing.
Sure. Yeah. And although, right, there is a lot of prayer and contemplation and things like that, it's also, you know, we're not serious all the time. I think sometimes there can be this image of, like, I don't know, when you think of like Dorothy Day, Mother Teresa type figures of prayer at all hours or study or service. And there's both this element of activism and radicalism, but also this element of just like fun and living life that I think is not always fully realized.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't say I'm friends with a ton of nuns or brothers or other religious people, but I've come across them in my Catholic worker life. And yeah, interestingly enough, sometimes they'll be like, oh, the Catholic workers, they're like very cool. Like we take a vow of poverty, but the Catholic workers, like, they live in these houses that have all these people and sometimes like bugs or something like that. They're the real simple living ones, and they give us like a whole lot of credit. But yeah, at the same time, you know, we're probably a lot less reverent, many of us, in many ways to that, like, a very traditional person might associate with, you know, holiness or something like that. I don't know.
Sure. And actually in Chicago, especially at Tsukasa, there have been a good number of religious, mostly nuns, I believe, although there was a brother who helped found it, who've lived there in community. And that is not uncommon within the worker to have some religious nuns or brothers who do live in community. And I think that element also kind of provides this understanding of, yeah, you know, people are people. And with both with the reverence and the focus on spirituality, but also elements of personality and fun and joy.
Totally. We even talked to Catherine Morris, who, remember, was assigned by her religious order to go work at the Catholic Worker for a year, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely true. Yeah, one thing I appreciate about Hope being at Emmaus, and we do have some other young people here as well, is some of that excitement and energy and passion of this piece of sort of like the world is open to possibility and we just need to step into it, into focusing on values and living into it. And I think sometimes the risk of being in community or the Catholic Worker or really doing anything for too long is both the possibility of like cynicism. And sometimes you see that feeling of like, well, we've tried that already and it didn't necessarily turn out, and sometimes can close us off to trying new ideas because we kind of dismiss them. Sometimes that rightfully so. But I think that one of the things I appreciate about younger Catholic workers, at least younger than the two of us, is some of that new energy and passion. And in some ways, a recentering or regrounding to what I think draws most people to the Catholic Worker to begin with, to like this ideal of how to live.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic tension at a lot of worker houses, is the people who have been there a long time, like maybe they've even tried stuff, versus the new people who are very excited wanting to do stuff, and like trying to balance that. Because there is a certain amount of wisdom that comes with just having done it, but there is like a certain amount of tiredness or even just like routineness, I think, can be a force to like kind of drag us down or something.
For sure.
I did get to do the jail support when I was in Chicago visiting you all at Emmaus House. And, you know, a lot of people ask me as I travel around Catholic Workers, do you have a favorite or is there a best or whatever? And I don't really, but I did really enjoy doing the jail support with Hope. It is a good project. And I can only imagine in these like frigid Chicago winters, how much even more it's appreciated than when I was there kind of at the end of the summer. But yeah, I think it's a great project. And Hope kind of mentioned some people question like, oh, well, why are you focusing on giving these like inmates the hospitality, you know, like that's how you're spending your time. And as Catholic workers, in my mind, that's almost like all the more reason to do it, is because other people are thumbing their nose at it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps us challenge our ideas of that like deserving and undeserving form. And it's okay, Theo, you can share that we're your favorite Catholic worker. That's okay.
I didn't say that much, but that was one of my favorite elements of a Catholic worker. I mean, there's so many pieces to like what a community is and stuff like that. And even the jail support is just like one of many things happening around Emmaus House too. So while I'm not saying Emmaus House is my favorite Catholic worker, I am saying that I think it's very cool that they do the jail support and even host it out of the garage or whatever too.
It's true. It's true. Every community is special in its own way.
Thank you.
All right, well, that wraps up another episode of Coffee with Catholic Workers. If you want to reach out to Theo and I with comments, suggestions, clarification of thought, you can email us at coffeewithcatholicworkers@gmail.com. We want to thank Chris from the Bloomington Catholic Worker for help editing, David Hayes for our music, and Becky McIntyre for our graphic.
Thanks again for joining us for some clarification of thought. We hope today's conversation and discussions have been enlightening, and maybe even that you're encouraged to go out and help build a world where it's easier to be good.